Let me begin my reflection with slavery. Yesterday, slavery came up in our conversation as an instructive point of reference for our exploration of migration. And that juxtaposition of migration and slavery stayed with me. And overnight, I tried to examine and unpack my own reaction. At a superficial level, pictures and footage of sea vessels teeming with hundreds of brown and black bodies desperate to reach European shores may conjure up our historical memory of slave ships transporting Africans to the Americas. In this analysis, the slave trader of yesteryear has become the smuggler of today. On a somewhat deeper level, that most infamous of European and American institutions, the Atlantic slave trade, shares a kinship, a common genealogy with the migration towards Europe seen today. The triangle trade was among the earliest expressions of European colonialism and expansionism. The fruits of that crime against humanity fueled the prosperity of European and North American societies and polities, and it's a prosperity that carries us into the present day. Of course, subsequent expressions of European colonialism further stunted the normal development of African and Western Asian and other societies and polities. These include contemporary modes of North American and European political interventionism, as well as economic control, which we heard about in another conversation last night. One of the many consequences of this long historical process of domination and exploitation that results in the unequal accumulation of wealth, resources, and power in the global north is the flow north of some subset of the impoverished southern masses. In that sense, perhaps, the Atlantic slave trade and today's migratory flows are distantly related branches of the same tree. But of course, the parallels only carry us so far. Migration, for the most part, retains an element of volition, of independent agency, that is altogether absent in the context of slavery. Economic necessity may well force a migrant to leave her homeland and embark on a dangerous journey to Europe. But a decision made by a migrant, albeit under very real and indisputable economic duress, remains qualitatively different from the experience of a slave who is abducted against her will and sold in chains into forced labor in a foreign land. The closest we get to the complete negation of free will that characterizes slavery is with those who must flee their homeland to seek refuge elsewhere, because remaining in a place like Syria, for example, would likely cost them their lives. But even these important distinctions, I mean, even then, very important distinctions remain. Those refugees, for example, once out of their country, usually retain a share, even if it's a very limited share, of freedom that slaves are simply never allowed to enjoy. So there lies the limit to any parallel between migration and slavery, and our respect for the memory and the lived experiences and suffering of the victims of slavery dictates that we recognize and honor that limit. Crucially, it may also help guide us out of the darkness of our current historical moment. In other words, a principled and firm commitment to centering the experiences, the perspectives, and the voices of those who are most directly and deeply affected might prove salutary for all of us as we strategize together and try to find a way forward. Joining convenings like this one here today may well be a necessary step forward, but it's certainly not sufficient. We all need to stand by those who are in the crosshairs, those who have the most skin in the game, that is to say, the refugees, the migrants. And to the extent that we can, I think we need to have our own skin in the game. We need to have that sort of physical investment. And we need to do that with our bodies, by deed, and not only by word or by thought. I wanted to share some images with you just to conclude and maybe illustrate a bit more concretely what I mean. I wanted to show you what, you know, that might look like. I'm not sure this works, though. Maybe we could do this like old school and I can just say slide. Oh, it worked. All right, so these are some pictures of the crowds of hundreds of people who, you know, gathered in protest to support and stand by citizens of seven Muslim-majority countries who were detained at JFK Airport in New York City. Those people moved there immediately, and they stood there in solidarity with fellow human beings, to help center those fellow human beings' bodies, their voices, and their current experiences, their current predicament. They gathered in that place because they believed in an inherent and inalienable right to human migration and in the right to seek refuge. If you read some of those placards, they pretty much say exactly what I've just said. I'm really harming the technology here. I apologize to Hakave. And importantly, they stayed there because they wanted to resist. They didn't just want to express their support for and their belief in a right to migration. They stayed there because they wanted to resist the inwards migration of our own borders, the isolationist, xenophobic closing in of constructed boundaries that we're seeing in the United States, that we're seeing in Europe, and that we're seeing in other places. So, you know, only that sort of sustained and physical commitment stands a chance to turn the tide today. Thank you.